"Me a shadow might have lied about the reason why," said Asha. "Can you do it?" Aaron slowly put down the vessel he'd been holding, shaking his head.
"I don't know,"
he admitted after a moment.
"There are a lot of variables. If the memory has just been walled off rather than erased, maybe. But it could be dangerous. There has to be a reason shadows lose their memory, Asha. It's probably a defense. Messing with the mind when it's trying to protect you. I have no idea of the consequences."
He frowned.
"And even if I could access the memory, I'd have to break down whatever barriers are in place to get at it. Which means that it won't be shut off from your mind anymore either. I just don't think..."
Asha spun, stiffening as a metallic scratching sound echoed through the room. Aaron paled. He heard it too. Someone was unlocking the door.
"No time," he murmured,
snatching up something from the shelf nearby and tossing it to Asha. She caught it before realizing what it was. A veil. Without hesitating, Asha pressed the open end of the silver torque onto her arm. Everything shimmered. A moment later, the door swung open. A tall, thin, blue-cloaked administrator strode through, freezing when he realized a lamp was already lit. His eyes moved straight to Aaron, who was now standing with his back to the door, examining a shelf.
"What are you doing in here?"
said the administrator angrily, his voice booming around the warehouse. Aaron turned, and Asha shook her head in silent admiration at his nonchalant expression.
"Administrator Giannis," he said politely, giving a slight bow. "Duke Andras asked me to store something for him in here."
The man called Giannis crossed his arms.
"I recognize you. That servant that kept spilling drinks when I met with Elysian a few weeks ago."
He shook his head.
"I don't believe you. This area of the palace is strictly off limits, and the Duke knows it."
Aaron looked hurt.
"Duke Andras will confirm he asked me," he said in an injured tone.
He reached into his pocket, producing the ring Asha had been handling a few moments ago.
"See? I was just trying to decide where it goes."
Giannis studied the ring with narrowed eyes.
"It goes wherever there is a space. There's no order to any of this junk."
He shook his head, taking an object of his own from his pocket and tossing it onto a nearby shelf.
"Give me that, and come with me. I'm not letting you out of my sight until I speak to Elysian. So I hope for your sake you're telling the truth."
"Of course, Administrator. I'm happy to help."
Giannis gave a brusque nod.
"You're alone in here?"
"Yes."
Giannis looked around suspiciously, but eventually nodded again, apparently satisfied.
"Then let's go."
"Just let me get the Duke's key. I left it lying around on one of these shelves," said Aaron, his tone embarrassed. "I wouldn't want it to be locked in here. It might be a while before someone can come down here again to fetch it."
He started walking towards a shelf near where Asha stood. It took her a couple of moments to realize his words had been directed at her. Moving as quietly as possible, she slipped around the administrator and through the still open door, breathing a sigh of relief as she emerged into the passageway beyond. Aaron had been right. The door required a key to unlock it, no matter which side of it you were. Once outside, she set off at a light jog for the main section of the palace. As soon as she was certain she was alone, she removed the veil from her arm. Her first thought was to head for her rooms. After such a near miss, she wanted nothing more than to collapse onto her bed and rest. But after a moment, she made for Elysian's study instead. Fortunately, there was no one waiting outside today. Either Elysian had dealt with all the concerned nobility, or he had grown sick of them and had ordered them to leave him alone. Asha suspected the latter. She knocked, relieved to see Elysian when the door opened. The Duke frowned around at the empty hallway.
"Asholia, this isn't the best time."
"It's urgent, and it won't take long."
Once she was inside, she drew the veil from her pocket, showing it to Elysian.
"I was helping Aaron look for something we could use amongst the vessels," she said quickly. "An administrator came in while we were there. Giannis, I think his name was. I hid with this, but Aaron didn't have time. He told Giannis you sent him down there to store a ring."
Elysian nodded calmly, as if this was entirely expected.
Thank you, Asha. Jonas won't be happy, but he rarely is. Don't worry. It will be fine.
He made a face.
You should probably use the veil again, though.
Asha frowned.
Why?
A knock came at the door. Asha pressed the silver torque back onto her arm as Alosian rose. He checked to see that she was no longer visible, then opened the door.
Jonas, what a pleasant surprise,
said the Duke in an amiable tone, stepping back to let the administrator in.
And Aaron, too, I see. How can I help you?
Jonas made no move to enter.
This young man says you gave him this key,
he handed the storeroom key to the Duke,
and sent him to put something in the old section?
That's correct. A silver ring, confirmed Alosian. Aaron has been with me for years. I trust him.
Jonas's face tightened, and he reached into his pocket and handed the ring across to Alosian before turning to Aaron.
You may go, he said curtly.
Aaron nodded, looking relieved, then vanished down the hallway.
Would you like to come in?
Asked Alosian, gesturing inside his study. Jonas's eyes bore into the Duke's.
He shouldn't have been down there, Your Grace.
He made no move to enter. Alosian sighed.
Do you really think I would have sent him if I didn't think he was trustworthy?
That's not your decision to make. Administration won't be happy, Your Grace.
Alosian leaned forward slightly and his tone changed. It was still friendly, but the words had steel beneath them this time.
Administration, answer to me, as do you. You would do well to remember that.
Jonas matched Alosian's gaze unperturbed.
As you say.
He moved to walk away, then hesitated, turning back.
What happened to you, Your Grace?
The Duke frowned.
I don't know what you're...
Yes, you do.
Jonas studied Alosian's face closely.
You used to believe in our purpose here. The importance of the work. You know the worst part of today? I believed that boy even before I came up here. A few years ago, I wouldn't have even had to check with you. I would have known he was lying.
He shook his head, eyes narrowed.
Something changed, but I was never able to figure out what.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jonas, said Alosian, sounding weary.
Jonas gazed at the North Warden for a few more seconds, then snorted in disgust.
Of course you don't.
He spun on his heel and vanished down the hallway. Alosian watched him go, then closed the door.
You can take it off again.
Asha didn't respond for a moment. She'd been half listening to the conversation, but there had been something else that was distracting her. Something she'd noticed when she'd put the veil on the first time, but had been too flustered to pay it any attention. The veil was drawing essence from her. From her reserve. It was only a thin stream of energy, but it was definitely there. She closed her eyes, reaching out for essence herself. There was nothing there, but the momentary disappointment faded as she considered the possibilities. The art of making vessels had been lost hundreds of years ago, so very little was known about their operation. But if they could tap a shadow's reserve, it meant that becoming a shadow hadn't destroyed her reserve, only blocked it off. It meant that, just maybe, Davian had been right. There could be a cure, a way to reverse it. Trembling, she released the veil from her arm, allowing herself to fade back into view. Alosian looked at her in concern as he saw the expression on her face.
What's wrong?
Asha hesitated, a dozen thoughts flashing through her mind at once. If this was true for all vessels and all shadows, then the implications of what she'd discovered were enormous. Shadows lost their mark, were not bound by the tenets. They could use vessels however they chose. Use the weapons. Perhaps not as effectively as the gifted. Most shadows were gifted who had failed their trials, after all. But each one could still count for 100 normal soldiers if they could be convinced to defend the city. On the other hand, she trusted Alosian, but he was the North Warden. Was this something he would feel obliged to warn administration about? because given how much administrators already feared the Shadrahin, and by extension all shadows, she shuddered to think what the reaction might be to such news as this. Then she thought of the visions in the journal, and she knew there wasn't really a choice. The augurs had seen the blind inside the city. This wasn't information she could withhold.
I'm fairly certain the veil was drawing from my reserve, she said, voice shaking a little.
Elosian stared at her blankly for a few moments.
Your reserve, he repeated.
I know how it sounds,
Asha rubbed her forehead, staring at the torque in her hand.
But it's not my imagination.
Elosian shook his head.
You must be mistaken. If shadows could use vessels, we would know about it.
Would we?
Asha looked him in the eye.
Shadows have only been around since the war, and given how we're treated, I cannot imagine many of us have even had the chance to see a vessel, let alone touch one. We're mostly gifted who failed our trials, remember? I know the shadows at the toll wouldn't be allowed anywhere near Athian's vessels, and administration won't let a shadow anywhere near anything.
She shrugged.
And let's be honest, I don't know many shadows who would make the knowledge public even if they did find out.
Elosian stared at her for a few seconds, then tossed her something small that glinted as it spun through the air.
Prove it.
Asha caught the object neatly and opened her hand, staring down at what she held. The silver ring from the storeroom.
Aaron says this can punch a hole through a wall.
That was the first vessel Aaron ever tested, and he poured enough essence into that thing to punch a hole through Ilantora, said Elosian dryly. Just a trickle should be fine.
Asha nodded, holding the ring in front of her. She was about to close her eyes when Elosian coughed.
Even so, if you could please point it away from my head.
Asha gave him a crooked smile, adjusting so that she was facing Elosian's bookcase. She took a deep breath, concentrated. At first, there was nothing. Then, a connection, a sense of energy building up in the ring. She released it. Then she was flying backwards, crashing against the far wall hard enough to rattle her teeth as Elosian's carefully stacked shelves of books and documents exploded into a fluttering, chaotic mess of papers. Dazed, Asha accepted Elosian's help as she struggled to her feet, eyes wide. They both stood for a few moments, surveying the carnage. The point of impact on the bookcase had splintered the shelf, and there was a circular series of cracks in the stone where the blow had dented the wall behind.
Fates, said Elosian.
He looked at the wall, then Asha, then the wall again.
Fates, he repeated dazedly.
They spent the next few minutes tidying the mess as best they could. Silent until the worst of it was cleared, each lost in their own thoughts. Eventually, Elosian sat, gesturing for Asha to do the same, and stared at her like a puzzle to be solved.
Assuming this applies to all shadows and not just you, he said quietly. You're not bound by the tenets?
Asha shook her head.
Not from what I can tell.
Elosian rubbed his forehead.
I need time to think about this.
He grimaced.
In the meantime, I need your word. You don't breathe a word of this, not to anyone, not even to the augurs. If this ever got out...
His frown deepened.
Panic. Overreaction from administration and probably from a lot of common folk, too. Which ends badly for the shadows. And then any shadows who manage to get hold of a vessel...
He looked sick.
I know a lot of shadows are good people, Asha, but a lot of them hate administration for making them the way they are. Not sure I can blame them either, but giving them weapons like that...
Asha nodded. She'd had time to process the implications now, and she knew that what the Duke was saying was true.
You have my word, she assured him. What about for defending against the blind, though?
Elosian shook his head.
No, not even for that.
He held up a hand as Asha made to protest.
And regardless, the shadows are disparate, disorganized, and have little allegiance to the city. Even if we sent word out, there's no way we could arrange them into any meaningful group.
There's one person who could. Asha raised an eyebrow. Who already has?
Elosian stared at her in pure disbelief.
After what they've done? After what they did to you?
He shook his head.
No, we're not there yet.
That wasn't him. And we know the blind get inside the city.
We believe they do, corrected Elosian. But right now we have an army of 9,000 good men standing in their way, not to mention the shields at Fedris Idri. I'm worried, Asha, but not worried enough to give over some of the most powerful weapons ever created into the hands of murderers, particularly ones who wouldn't hesitate to turn those weapons on us once the battle's over.
He held up a hand as he saw Asha's face.
I'm not saying I won't consider it, but we're not there yet.
Asha gave a reluctant nod, then offered the ring back to Elosian. The Duke hesitated for a moment, then shook his head.
Keep it, he said. Just don't let Jonas see it.
He paused.
And it probably goes without saying, but be very careful of Jonas if you come across him in your duties as representative. He's a zealot, the worst kind. Give him the opportunity and he'd wipe out every gifted and shadow in existence.
Asha inclined her head.
I will be.
They talked a little more after that, but before long, Asha made her excuses and headed back towards her rooms. She wanted to be alone for a while, to gather her racing thoughts, to try and calmly determine what this all meant. She shook her head, still dazed as she made her way along the palace hallways, rolling the silver ring idly in her hand. Her reserve was intact, just blocked off somehow. Could Davian have been right? Was it possible to somehow undo becoming a shadow? Then she frowned, coming to a gradual halt as she realized something else. For the first time, Asha felt certain that Davian had actually spoken to her that day, had been there in the room with her. She knew that it hadn't been some kind of odd dream. Asha slipped the ring onto her finger and walked on. She had a lot to think about. Aaron looked up as Asha entered the lock room.
Quick thinking earlier, he said once she'd shut the door. I gather Jonas wasn't too happy with Elosian?
Asha shook her head.
Decidedly unhappy.
She sat opposite the auger, silent for a moment.
Before he interrupted us, it's dangerous, Asha, interjected Aaron, his expression serious.
The conversation from the storeroom had obviously been on his mind, too.
I couldn't guarantee your safety.
Asha took a deep breath. If Davian was really alive, then Ilseth had lied to her, lied to everyone, about why she'd been made a shadow. And there had to be a reason for that.
I don't care, she said quietly. I want you to try and restore my memories.
She set her features into a grim mask of determination and looked Aaron in the eye, daring him to refuse her.
I want to remember what happened at Kaladel.
Chapter 35. Davian grinned as he walked around Malshash, watching the almost motionless man. A stone fell slowly from his hand where he'd dropped it only a split second ago. Yet Davian had been watching it fall for at least a count of 10. They had spent the last few days working on this ability, one of the hardest to master according to Malshash, and one of the most relevant to Davian's return through the rift. The mysterious augur had been hesitant about using it here in Dailanis. He was worried what the implications might be this close to the Javet. But his determination that Davian learn the ability had won out. It had been frustrating at first. Aside from trying to use essence, Davian had never had so much trouble learning anything in his life. Even now he sweated with the strain of concentration, letting time move all around him but letting it touch him as little as possible. It had been a difficult concept to explain for both Malshash and the authors of the books he'd read, and now Davian understood why. It was like trying to stand in a stream of water without getting wet. He leaned down, grabbing the stone in midair, allowing the time bubble, as he thought of it, to encapsulate it as well. That was important, Otherwise the stone would, in reality, be moving at speeds its structure could not handle, and would likely disintegrate or melt. He moved a few paces away from Melshash and then relaxed, allowing time to crash back into him. It was momentarily disorienting, but he quickly recovered. Melshash blinked, then realized the stone had vanished from in front of him. He looked up at Davian, who opened his palm to display the smooth rock, grinning. Melshash smiled back.
Excellent, Davian.
The praise was genuine, but he seemed less enthusiastic today for some reason. Davian still had not been able to figure out the enigmatic stranger, who this morning wore the face of a handsome young man with jet-black hair, dark skin, and deep, piercing eyes. At times, Melshash seemed distant, like today. At others, he seemed jovial, friendly. Mostly, though, Davian thought he seemed sad. Occasionally, he would catch Melshash watching him train, and there would be such a look of pain on his face that it almost made him stop. He didn't intrude as to why, though. Whenever he asked personal questions of Melshash, the augur simply went quiet. Those matters were something Melshash clearly had no interest in talking about. Davian accepted the compliment with an inclined head, the feeling of accomplishment a warmth in his belly. "Necessity is a wonderful motivator," he said in a dry tone. Then he grinned. "I have to say, though, that Khan is amazing. These abilities, this power, is more than I could ever have dreamed. I've never experienced anything like it." Melshash studied him for a moment. "I understand," he said quietly. "But be very wary of enjoying yourself too much. Most augurs learn these powers as they grow up, are taught their proper applications over the course of years, not weeks." Davian's smile faded.
"What do you mean?"
Melshash shrugged.
"Augurs are supposed to train in each power for a year and a day before they are allowed to use them in the real world. You're going to have a grand total of a few weeks for all of them, if we're lucky. On top of that, you've been striving for your powers for so long and now you're receiving them all at once. On the one hand, that will make you more appreciative of them. On the other, it could make you overeager to use them."
Davian raised an eyebrow.
"So you don't trust me?"
"It's not that," Melshash rushed to assure him.
"It's only that I've seen firsthand what power like this can do to the best of people. I'm not suggesting it will happen to you, but believe me, you will be tested. You'll have opportunities, many opportunities, to use Khan in ways that will benefit you, but are not strictly moral. It's a constant temptation, Davian. There is a reason why the training is supposed to take so long. You need to be prepared for the new choices these powers give you."
Davian nodded, though he still felt vaguely irritated at the suggestion he would abuse his abilities.
"Of course."
Melshash watched him for a moment longer, then nodded in a satisfied manner.
"Good."
He stroked his chin. Davian often wondered whether his real form had a beard, for it seemed to be a habit of his, regardless of what face he wore.
"Which power should we try next?"
Davian didn't have to think. He knew which one he wanted to try the most.
"Foresight."
Melshash hesitated, then shook his head.
"I'm sorry. I suppressed that ability for a reason, Davian. It's just too dangerous here."
"But surely it's the closest ability to traveling through the rift itself," pointed out Davian.
"Isn't it worth the risk?"
Melshash looked uncomfortable.
"It doesn't matter. I gave up the power to see some time ago," he confessed. "I don't have the knowledge of how to do it."
"What?" Davian frowned in confusion.
"You gave it up? Why?"
"It doesn't matter." Melshash rubbed the back of his neck tiredly, his tone indicating he wished to discuss the topic no further.
"I can't see, and so I am of little help to you in that regard."
Davian scowled.
"Why not just tell me?"
Melshash met his gaze, a chill in his stare.
"Because it's none of your business, Davian."
He held up his hand.
I know that's not a satisfactory answer, but it's all you're going to get. So please, let it go.
Davian grimaced, but nodded his acquiescence. If Malshash wanted to be mysterious, that was his prerogative, so long as he taught Davian what was needed to get home.
Fine. If you don't know how to see, do you at least know something about it? The books all said that the visions inevitably come to pass. But as I told you, in my time, the augurs were overthrown after their visions stopped coming true.
What does that mean?
Malshash hesitated.
If what I've come to believe here these past couple of weeks is true, it means they were tricked, Davian. It's as simple as that.
So you don't believe the future can be changed?
I did. Once. I hoped it could be, admitted Malshash. But from what I've seen, the future can no more be changed than the past.
Davian frowned.
So our fate is set, no matter what we do? We can't change anything?
Malshash inclined his head.
I think so, though perhaps that's not the best way to think about it, he said quietly. The future may be immutable, but it's not because our choices do not change anything. It's that they already have changed things. The decisions you make tomorrow are the same as those you made yesterday. Still your choices and still with consequences, but unalterable. The only difference is your knowledge of the decisions you made yesterday.
Davian screwed up his face.
I don't understand.
Malshash sighed.
When you came to this time, you momentarily stepped outside of time. A place where time doesn't exist. Nothing to separate events from one another, or to give them length. They happen simultaneously and for eternity.
He shrugged.
In short, all that will happen has already happened. It's just that we are experiencing it through the lens of time.
Davian shook his head.
I don't accept that. There has to be another explanation.
Malshash grunted.
You're not a believer in El, then?
Davian frowned at the question.
Not especially. That religion has been all but destroyed in my time. In Andara, at least.
Malshash raised an eyebrow.
Has it now? He murmured.
He nodded to himself.
I see. Because of what you told me about the augurs.
Davian nodded.
As soon as they began to get things wrong, people started losing faith. After the Unseen War, the Loyalists decided it meant either El had never existed, his plan had gone awry somehow, or that he was dead. And that in any case, no one should be worshipping him.
Malshash sighed.
Such is the way of weak men, he murmured, daring to believe only in what can be seen, touched, and measured.
Davian frowned.
I thought the logic made a kind of sense.
Malshash shook his head ruefully.
It does. That's the problem. It was always a danger, priests pointing to the abilities of men as proof of the existence of God. Already, even in this time, they are becoming reliant on the acts of the augurs to proclaim El's existence. It sounds like it will destroy them.
So you believe?
Asked Davian. Malshash hesitated.
In his existence? Yes, he said slowly. Do you know why the augurs were thought to prove it?
Davian nodded, thinking back to what Mistress Alita had taught him.
El was supposed to have the perfect plan, to be in complete control of the world. The grand design. You can't have a perfect plan if men can determine their own futures, and the augurs were proof that the future was set.
He raised an eyebrow.
Until they started getting things wrong.
Exactly, Malshash sighed. Everyone thinks of us as great men, wise, untouchable. But you're an augur, Davian. You don't think you could be tricked?
Davian made to protest, then hesitated. He thought back to how Tenvar had fooled him at the school.
I suppose I could.
And if a great power, an ancient, malevolent power, bent its entire will to fooling you?
Davian paled.
Is that what happened to the augurs?
Maybe. Malshash shrugged. I can only speculate.
Davian frowned.
You said an ancient power, a malevolent power.
His eyes narrowed.
Were you talking about our kind of aid?
Malshash grimaced.
No.
He really exists, though? Davian shuffled his feet nervously.
He's still alive, after all this time?
Malshash chuckled, though the sound was humorless.
Oh, yes. He is very much alive.
He rose, indicating the end of the conversation.
Enough about that. We should take a break for a meal and then continue your training.
Davian gave an absent nod in response. For a moment, he wanted to pursue what Malshash had said, but even as he opened his mouth, the desire left him, replaced by excitement at the prospect of learning new skills.
Can we try shapeshifting next?
He asked, unable to keep the eagerness from his tone. Malshash shook his head.
Another skill that is too dangerous, he admitted. There's a good reason you didn't know about it before you came here. No walker who has discovered the ability has ever passed on its knowledge. That alone should tell you how unsafe it is.
Davian sighed. Along with seeing, shapeshifting had been the ability he'd been most looking forward to learning.
I'll take the risk, he said stubbornly.
He grinned.
If you've seen me in the future, it means it can't kill me, right?
True. But it isn't relevant to what you need to know to get home.
Malshash gave him an apologetic shrug.
We don't have time for anything extra, Davian. Your bond here will begin weakening soon. It's already been 2 weeks. I'm surprised there have been no problems as it is. And I still don't believe you're ready to face the rift again.
Davian thought about protesting, but decided against it.
Very well, he said reluctantly. I think I'll stay here and do some reading if you want to eat.
Malshash hesitated but nodded.
I'll bring back some food. See you in an hour or so.
He turned and walked through the door, leaving Davian alone in the great library once again. Davian sat for a while, lost in thought. Then he came to a decision. He moved over to place his hand on the advisor and closed his eyes, concentrating. The blue line shot straight for one of the books on a nearby shelf. Davian grabbed it, then flipped through until he found what he was looking for. The section entitled, Shapeshifting, Best Practices. He scanned the text, frowning. The entry was only a page long, but he knew that in the other books he'd read, shapeshifting was mentioned only briefly too, if at all. It seemed Malshash had been right about his knowledge not being passed on. The description in this book of how to undertake the process was vague, but it sounded simple enough. Davian read the section a few times to make sure he understood everything, then closed his eyes. He held a picture of Weir in his mind. The book specified that the shapeshifter needed only a passing familiarity with the appearance of whomever they were trying to change into, an imprint of the person, but Davian thought it would be safest to pick someone he knew well. He drew on Khan, let the dark substance settle into his flesh, cooling and warming at the same time. He pictured Weir in his mind as clearly as he could, then willed his own flesh, his own face, to look the same. Immense pain tore through him. A scream ripped from his throat as he fell to the ground. Every nerve ending in his body felt like it was being burned by ice, and his eyes felt like someone was scraping hot knives across them. He could feel his ribs expanding, his bones growing, his muscles contorting themselves into position around his changing ligaments. His skin stretched until it felt as though it would break apart. He tasted blood. Then it was over. He lay on the cold stone floor for several minutes, drifting in and out of consciousness, his mind trying to recover from what had just happened. Eventually, he forced himself to kneel, then stand. He shuffled unsteadily on shaky legs that were longer than he was used to. He was taller. Everything seemed just a little further down than normal. Despite the aches, despite the memory of the fierce, unimaginable pain, he smiled to himself. It had worked. He hurried down a corridor into a room which he knew contained a mirror. As he came within sight of his reflection, he froze, staring in horror. His features, his body, were normal enough, but they were not Weir's. The reflection in the mirror was of an older man, at least in his 30s. He had dirty blonde hair and was of a size with Weir, but there the similarities ended. He had a hooked nose and small, beady black eyes. When Davian tried to smile, his lips curled upward into a sneer instead. His skin was weather-beaten rather than tanned, the skin of a sailor, perhaps? Whoever the man was, Davian was quite certain he had never seen him before. Davian scowled as he continued to examine his new visage. This man had facial scars, too. If anything, they stood out more than Davian's. That had been one of the fantasies he'd had about shape-shifting. He could finally wear a face that wasn't marred.
"Davian? Where are you?"
It was Melshash calling out, apparently having returned sooner than expected. Either that, or Davian had been unconscious longer than he'd realized. For a second, he considered trying to turn back, to hide what he'd done. But he knew immediately that it would not work, and was too dangerous besides. He was probably fortunate to have survived the first transition alone. He needed Malshash's help to return to his normal body. He slowly walked back down the corridor to the main chamber. Malshash was laying out some food on a nearby table, his back turned.
"I'm here," said Davian,
flinching as the voice emanating from his throat was deeper, huskier than his own. Malshash whirled in alarm. Before Davian knew what was happening, he was frozen to the spot, unable to move, though he could feel no bindings holding him in place. He stared at Malshash pleadingly.
"It's me,"
he said, hanging his head.
"I shapeshifted. I'm sorry."
There was silence. Davian raised his head again to find Malshash just looking at him, seeming more horrified than angry.
"Whose form is this?" asked Malshash eventually, sounding shaken.
Davian grimaced.
"I'm not sure. I pictured my friend Weir, but ended up like this. They look vaguely similar, but I don't believe I've ever seen this man before."
Malshash swallowed, looking disturbed. He waved his hand in the air, and Davian found he could move again.
"You must have seen him before," Malshash said softly. "There is no other explanation."
He seemed off, not just concerned or shocked. He appeared suddenly wary of Davian, as if he'd arrived expecting a mouse and instead found a lion. Davian shrugged. Even without the odd sensation of being in someone else's skin, he didn't like this body at all. It ached everywhere, particularly the fingers, which he could barely move without a dull pain shooting through his hand.
"I'm sorry," he repeated, his tone heavy with contrition. "It was a foolish thing to do, and it hurt."
He scratched his head.
"Can you help me change back? Preferably without the pain this time," he added with a shallow smile.
Malshash shook his head.
"If you did this safely one way, all you need to do is picture your own face and do the same."
He sighed.
"As for the pain, I'm afraid that's unavoidable. It happens every time you change."
Davian paled. He desperately didn't want to go through that again. Then he realized what Malshash was saying.
"But that means..."
His eyes widened.
"You do that every day?"
Malshash grunted.
"It certainly wakes me up in the morning." "But why?"
exclaimed Davian. The thought of facing that pain each and every day chilled him to his core.
"Why not just return to your own form?"
Malshash sighed.
"I've already told you, Davian. I need it to hide, and my own shape-shifting ability is next to useless. The talent I have for it now was taken from Ath herself. If I don't use it once during each day, it will return to her and I will be discovered, not to mention stuck in whatever form I happen to be in at the time."
He shrugged dismissively.
"Believe me, if there was a better choice, I would take it in a heartbeat."
Davian gave a reluctant nod.
I suppose I should just get this over and done with, then. Do you want me to leave?
No. It's probably safer if someone is watching over me.
Malshash inclined his head, moving over to a nearby chair and taking a seat. As Malshash had indicated, the process of shapeshifting was just as painful in reverse. By the time the echoes of Davian's screams had faded from the great library, though, he found himself fully aware of his surroundings. That was one thing, at least. The disorientation was not so bad changing back. Malshash walked over to where he lay, offering his hand and dragging Davian to his feet.
"You're back," he confirmed after a moment.
He shook his head in amazement.
"You pick things up so quickly, it's frightening, Davian."
His expression hardened.
"But never try something like that again. Understand? These early lessons are by far the most dangerous. You may not kill yourself, but there are plenty of ways you could be badly injured playing around with Khan."
Davian bowed his head.
"Of course," he said in a penitent tone, his face burning.
Inwardly, he kicked himself for his impatient overconfidence. Malshash had said these powers took a year and a day each to learn under normal circumstances. His teacher knew how important it was for Davian to grasp them. Malshash was pushing as hard as he thought possible. Davian had to trust him.
Malshash clapped Davian on the back. "I think this afternoon we should revisit what we've done so far. Make sure you haven't forgotten anything."
Davian smiled.
"You mean I should slow down for a few hours?"
He shrugged.
"Agreed."
They sat down to eat the meal Malshash had brought. Davian wolfed down his generous portion of food, a little surprised at the end that his stomach was still growling. He'd been eating more and more the last few days, but it never seemed to satisfy his hunger. Still, he'd been working harder than he ever had before. No doubt it was simply a side effect of that. They eventually resumed their work, Malshash acting as if nothing untoward had happened that morning. Still, to begin with, the image of the stranger's face in the mirror bothered Davian from time to time. He was sure he'd never seen the man before. There had to be a good explanation for it. Eventually, he became engrossed in the drills Malshash had set him, forgetting about it and all his other troubles for a time. He didn't even pay any attention to Malshash's occasional glances toward him. Uncertain, contemplating, worried. Chapter 36. Weir stretched nervously. Though he'd already begun to suspect, Tayris had just informed them that they were now less than a half-day's travel away from Ilin Ilan. The place where he'd grown up. The place where he was not simply Weir, but Torin Weirander Andrus, Prince of the Realm. People would be bowing and scraping whenever he was around. They would always smile at him, even if it was through gritted teeth. He was leaving a world and a life he loved to return to one where most people he met wore a mask. He'd begun seeing familiar landmarks over the past couple of days. They'd passed the Aloyne Marshes this morning. Yesterday, they'd traveled through the mid-sized town of Goeth, where he had distant relatives with estates. Now, in the distance, the tip of Ilin Tora was just barely visible against the horizon. Every step he took felt heavier with reluctant inevitability. He'd known this day would come, though he'd wished against it constantly.
"Which problem are you worrying about?"
came a soft voice at his side. He started, whipping his head around. Dizia was walking beside him, looking torn between amusement and concern. He smiled at her, though he knew the effort was a weak one at best.
"I'm trying to give them all a fair shot at ruining my day," he said lightly.
He couldn't help but widen his smile as the corners of Dizia's mouth turned upward. A moment later, he looked away, feeling like he'd been punched in the stomach. Being home meant seeing Dizia far less, too. If at all.
"Which one is winning at the moment?" she asked.
Weir grunted, glancing around. They were slightly separate from the others, able to have a conversation without being in danger of anyone overhearing.
"Going back to court," he admitted, "pretending to be someone I'm not."
Dizia's eyebrow raised a little. as opposed to the last few years? Weir sighed. You know what I mean. I won't even be able to look sideways at one of the gifted for the next few years. And there will be other restrictions on what I can do too, who I can spend time with. Dizia nodded slowly.
I know.
She gave a small smile.
Though that doesn't mean you won't run into people. Coincidentally.
Weir grinned. Certainly. Sometimes you can't avoid running into people, he agreed readily. His smile faded. But still, it won't be the same as out here.
He shook his head in frustration. I won't even be able to help to find out what happened at the school. It will be nothing but lessons in politics and maybe military tactics for the foreseeable future.
As long as there is a foreseeable future, observed Dizia, the rest will work itself out. She reached over and squeezed his arm, a reassuring touch. Weir gave a grim nod in response. The past couple of days, they had been moving very much against the flow of travelers. The closer they got to the city, the more people there seemed to be leaving it. Many were hauling carts and wagons filled to the brim with personal items. Some said they were leaving the city only as a precaution against the oncoming army, and expected to return once word came that the king's forces had defeated the enemy. But others were not so certain. "Do you believe what people are saying about the invaders?" he asked. "That they're stronger and faster than normal men should be?" Dizia shrugged.
"I'm not sure. On one hand, it's only a rumor, and it could be blown entirely out of proportion. I doubt we can trust what Jashal and Lys told us. On the other, we saw ourselves what they're capable of. They obviously have some powers."
She sighed.
"It's going to be a difficult time for your uncle."
Weir nodded. They had already heard murmurs against the king, rumors suggesting he had started to take a hard line against the gifted, just when he should be courting them and considering the possibility of modifying the tenets. It was hard to know how much was true and how much was just people's nervousness. It was only grumbling, the odd word here and there. But the message was clear enough. People were frightened by what they'd heard of the blind. They wanted the invaders defeated by any means possible.
"Whatever the blind are, it sounds like what we saw was hardly the worst of what they've done," Weir noted.
Word had begun to trickle in a couple of days ago from those refugees who were brave, or foolish, enough to come to Ilinilan to help fight. Villages burned to the ground, entire towns razed. Men, women, and children, regardless of whether they resisted, fled, or surrendered, being slaughtered and left for the animals.
"I hope we're making the right choice, going back to the city."
"Given the circumstances, it's the only thing we can do."
It was Tayrus interjecting. He'd drifted closer to them and had evidently overheard. He lowered his voice, looking at Weir.
"Before we reach Fedris Idri, Caden and I will need to part ways with the rest of you."
Weir nodded. He'd known it would probably be necessary.
"If there's any way I can help..."
Tayrus shook his head, looking up ahead at the steadily growing silhouette of Elin Tora.
"No. Needless to say, Weir, even though it's been a few years and my face has changed, once inside the city, I'll need to tread lightly. I was known to a lot of administrators. If I'm caught, well, the last thing you need is to be associated with me."
Weir acknowledged the advice with a nod, though it left a bitter taste in his mouth. Tayrus was right. He couldn't afford to be found traveling with any of the gifted, let alone with two accused of murder.
"Still, there must be something I can do, even if it's not directly," he said. "My name won't carry much weight in political circles just yet, but Caroline will be back from Desriel by now. I can probably convince her to use her connections, put pressure on the council to help you, should things not go well at the toll."
Tayrus raised an eyebrow.
"To do that, you would need to tell her that Caden and I were in the city, and she didn't exactly take a shine to us when we last met."
Weir nodded.
"True, but a lot has changed since Thrindar. You warned us about the boundary weakening before the invasion began, and that will count for something. I know my father and uncle won't believe a word of your theory, but Caroline's always made up her own mind about things. I think I can convince her.
Tayrus looked dubious but nodded.
I leave it to your judgment, Weir, he said quietly.
Then I'll try. If you fail at the toll, come to the palace and ask for Aelric or Ditzia. I'll make sure they know what to do. At worst, they have to turn you away.
Tayrus clapped Weir on the shoulder.
That's very generous. I hope it won't come to that, but should the council be unwilling to listen, I'll take you up on that offer. There won't be many other places for us to turn, to be honest.
Weir inclined his head.
I'll also be listening for any notable arrests in the city. If the worst should happen and you get caught, I'll see what I can do with administration. It will be risky, but aside from anything else, getting Caden's memories restored is too important at the moment.
Tayrus smiled slightly.
You're a handy man to have around, Weir.
He glanced over at Caden.
I should let him know what to expect, I suppose, he murmured to himself, detaching himself from the group.
Weir took a deep breath, glancing across at Ditzia.
So I suppose this is it. Everything changes, he said, tone grim despite his best efforts.
Ilin Toro was now clearly visible up ahead.
Weir could even make out the gap in the mountains where Fedris Idri lay.
Ditzia nodded, almost to herself.
Everything changes, she repeated quietly.
Caden looked up as Tayrus tapped him on the shoulder. We're nearly at the city, the scarred man informed him. We should talk about what's going to happen next.
Caden nodded. I've been wondering.
He'd already gathered that Tayrus was not on the best of terms with the toll and actively wanted by administration. The end of their trip was going to be no easier than the rest of it, it seemed.
First, we're going to split up from the others soon, before we reach the city.
Caden frowned.
Why?
Tayrus shrugged.
Justified or not, we've been accused of crimes, and the others have not. Aelric and Ditzia have reputations to protect, and it's in Weir's best interests if he's not associated with us either. Starting out in the toll can be hard enough without that sort of introduction.
Oh.
It made sense. Still, he felt the slightest sting of betrayal. It was irrational, he knew, but the others were his closest, only, friends. Tayrus saw his expression and gave him a sympathetic smile.
It was my decision. I insisted, he added. The others understand the logic behind it, but it's not something they would have asked for.
Caden opened his mouth to reply. Without warning, screams split the air. Everyone froze as chaos erupted on the road just ahead of them. Travelers in front of them scattered, fleeing across fields, away from a figure swathed in black. A figure hard to focus on, as if somehow deep in shadow despite the noonday sun shining on it. It was surrounded by bodies. Four, Caden thought. None of them moved. Tayrus gripped his shoulder.
Get ready, he muttered. There's nowhere to run this time. We can't beat it without you.
The Shateth was coming now, walking steadily towards them, though it was covering the distance at an unnatural speed for its gait. Ditzia had already unslung her bow and was knocking an arrow. Caden watched in stunned fascination as she loosed and the creature moved smoothly to one side, impossibly fast, the arrow clattering harmlessly to the road behind it. Aelric was trying to push his way forward, sword drawn, but to Caden's relief, Weir dragged the other boy back again. Steel would have no place in this battle. In moments, the creature was standing only 20 feet away.
You were warned, Tayrusar,
it hissed. Its face was covered by its hood, but Caden could feel the malice of its gaze on him.
I told you that all you needed to do was relinquish him, and no one else would die. Now your companions will all pay for your foolishness.
Caden closed his eyes, concentrating. He knew what to do. He moved several paces in front of the others, stretching out his hands toward the Shateth and tapping his reserve. A torrent of energy exploded from him. A blinding wave of yellow-white light. This was power. He gloried in the strength he felt, how vivid the colors of the world were, how right the feeling was. He released essence, panting a little from the exertion, almost laughing at how easily it had come to him. Then he stumbled as the memory crashed into him. The cold wind of Talon Ghul swept silently through the deserted stone streets, sending a shiver down his spine. He increased his pace. Seclusion was an area of Ilshan Gathdel Teth where no living thing survived for long, and powerful though he was, he had no desire to find out why. He glanced to his right. Gellan was walking alongside him, lost in thought, apparently unperturbed by where they were. That was his way, though. Unflappable, silent unless spoken to, but always observing, always thinking. A strong successor to Chain.
"What do you think?" he asked Gellan.
Gellan continued as if he hadn't heard for a few moments, then sighed.
"I think even from here there must be a way to use them, to turn their existence to our advantage. The gifted have no idea of the powers they are meddling with, creating these Shateth. I doubt they would be able to stop us taking their new toys away from them."
Caden nodded. He had been thinking much the same thing.
"To do that, he would need to send one of us across."
Gellan didn't look at him, but Caden saw the slightest tensing of muscles in the other man's face.
"Dangerous ground, Tal'Kamar," he said softly.
Caden grimaced, but nodded. It was dangerous ground. Still,
"Vote for me." "I've voted for you the last 3 times. People are beginning to talk. He is already suspicious."
Caden shrugged.
"That doesn't matter. We can't create Shateth ourselves, and won't be able to until the power of the Elshara has been broken. When that happens, the attack will already be underway. The Andorans have 5 of them. 5. If they still control them when the time comes, what do you think will happen to our forces?"
He paused.
"I am the only one who can do this, Gellan. You know that."
Gellan grunted noncommittally, but Caden knew his point had been made. They walked on in silence for a while. Then Gellan said,
"He thinks you are planning to overthrow him, you know."
Caden blanched.
"What?"
The exclamation rang out over the empty streets and he clapped his hand over his mouth. Whatever lurked in seclusion, the last thing he wanted was to attract its attention. Gellan glanced around to check there was no one nearby, though they both knew they were alone here.
"All your trips outside. You're neglecting your duties at the Serrarium. And the incident with Nethgulla didn't go over well either."
Caden snorted. Inwardly, he didn't know whether to be amused or fearful.
"Where did you hear that?"
They had reached a black iron gate. With a gentle push, Caden opened it enough for them to pass through into the building beyond.
"Around," replied Gellan.
Caden frowned.
"Needless to say, it is untrue."
In some ways, it couldn't be further from the truth.
"Of course," said Gellan smoothly.
They walked inside without another word. As Caden's vision cleared, his triumphant smile faded. The Shateth stood exactly where it had. Its hand was outstretched and a black, translucent, rippling bubble surrounded the creature's body. The Shateth lowered its hand, and the bubble disappeared. It gave a rasping laugh.
"You truly have forgotten, haven't you, Tal'Kamar?"
it said to Caden softly, pityingly.
"Elrith was caught by surprise when you attacked him, and Kerish and Nathaniel were craven. But I am neither unprepared nor afraid."
It stood motionless, waiting. Caden hesitated, still shaken by the memory. Like before, aspects of it were crystal clear. But there was no further knowledge, no sudden rush of information to tell him who he'd been. He could picture Gellan and knew his name, but knew nothing more of him outside of that memory. And what he'd said about the Shateth.
"Who do you serve?"
he asked the Shateth suddenly. Muscles tensed in case the creature attacked. The creature chuckled.
Are you not the one who set us free? Who do you serve, Talcamar?
It replied, quietly enough that the others could not overhear.
I can never keep track.
Caden felt the blood drain from his face. He dared not look back at the others.
I serve my friends and Andara. Whatever ties I had in my past life are gone.
He said the words with as much confidence as he could muster. The Shateth laughed again in its raspy voice.
You cannot escape yourself forever.
Suddenly a glow surrounded it, and time seemed to slow. Bursts of light erupted from the Shateth's chest, streaks of power that headed towards the other four members of Caden's party. He knew instantly that should those bolts touch them, they would be dead. There was only a moment to stop them. Even with his newfound control of essence, he couldn't shield them all. He couldn't choose, though.
He wanted to save them all. He needed to save them all. Desperately, he willed the bolts to stop. Dark bubbles, exactly like the one that had surrounded the Shateth, sprang up around Caden's companions. The bolts sizzled into the surface of each one and simply vanished, gone as if they had never existed. The Shateth gave an angry hiss as it realized its attack had been thwarted.
So, you have forgotten some, but not all, it said.
Caden nodded, trying to hide the fact that he was as surprised as the Shateth that the bubbles had appeared. Not all, he repeated grimly. He stretched out his hand once again towards the creature. This time, though, he didn't use essence. There was something else there, the same thing he'd used to create his companions' shields. The bubble appeared again around the Shateth, but Caden simply pushed at it. He felt it move, flex beneath his pressure. He closed his eyes, then imagined himself ripping the bubble away, tearing it like a piece of parchment. There was a shriek, and he opened his eyes to see the Shateth on the ground, writhing in pain.
No!
It screeched, angry and despairing.
It is not possible!
Caden walked over to it, ignoring the cautioning cries of the others who hadn't moved since the Shateth had first appeared. He stood over the creature, then leaned down and pulled back its hood. Beneath, there was a man's head, but it was disfigured, pale, and scarred. That was not what made Caden take an involuntary step back, though. The creature's eyes stared back at him with pain, with anger. Human eyes. Aside from its glare now, the Shateth showed no further outward signs of distress. It had stopped writhing and was instead staring up at Caden. It wore an almost curious expression.
You should know. I was the one who killed him, it whispered.
It wasn't a confession. There was no trace of sadness in the statement. It was gleeful. Caden frowned.
Who?
The Shateth scowled. It tried to rise, but Caden knelt on its chest, forcing it back down. For some reason, it seemed unable to use its powers at the moment.
And I had so looked forward to telling you,
it hissed, disappointed.
You must finish it, Caden, called Tayrus, his tone urgent. Don't let it distract you.
Caden hesitated, then leaned forward.
Who